Hi, and welcome back to The Thing About Cotton, a podcast brought to you by the International Cotton Association's Women in Cotton Committee. We are your hosts. I am Camille Cluzel from Louis Dreyfus. And today my co-host is Rebecca Owen, Director of Development at Better Cotton. Today's episode is one that we've been really keen to bring to life because it touches on something we talk about a lot in the industry but don't always fully unpack. Because the thing about cotton is, when we talk about regenerative agriculture or sustainability, we often talk about it in terms of ambition, targets, commitments, framework. But making that transition actually happen on the ground is something else entirely. And Rebecca, that's exactly the space you work in at Better Cotton, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. BCI works with millions of farmers around the world to produce cotton more sustainably. And we have just revised our principles and criteria to version 3.2 to strengthen our approach to regenerative agriculture as we move towards becoming a regenerative standard system. And building on Better Cotton's expertise of marrying both policy and implementation, we know that a successful regenerative transition relies on the right type of investment, which requires both positive market forces underpinned by supportive agricultural policies.
That's right. And in this episode, in order to bring a clear picture to our listeners to what happens both on the policy framework and on the ground, we've designed an episode where we're going to first interview a guest that's going to tell us about some very important work at governmental level. And then we're going to have someone on the ground telling us about the realities behind it. So to start with the global perspective, we're delighted to be joined by the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations, who are leading the International Year of the Woman Farmer, an initiative that aims to bring greater visibility and support to women across agricultural system worldwide. Dako Ndiaye is the gender team leader at the Rural Transformation and Gender Equality Division of the Food and Agricultural Organizations of the United Nations. She leads a multidisciplinary team working across agri-food systems, rural development, natural resource management, and climate change, with a strong focus on gender equality and social inclusion. She's also closely involved in coordinating initiatives for the International Year of the Woman Farmer. Dako brings nearly 30 years of experience in integrating gender into policies, programs, and investment strategies across the agri-food sector. Before joining FAO in 2014, she held senior roles at UN Women and the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, where she contributed to the development of the African Gender and Development Index. So, Dako, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on the Thing About Cotton podcast. It's a pleasure for us to join this conversation, particularly in this very important 2026 International Year of the Woman Farmer, a year that's been declared by the United Nations General Assembly and endorsed by over 120 countries worldwide, and that is coordinated by FAO in collaboration with other UN entities and with other partners across sectors.
That's a very exciting campaign. Can you tell us a little bit about how it came about and what the core objectives of the campaigns are?
Well, our focus this year is to really help ensure that this global designation of 2026 as the International Year of the Woman Farmer translates into greater recognition, accountability, stronger partnerships, and more sustained actions to address the challenges that women face across agri-food systems. We know that, you know, women make up 41% of the global agricultural labor force. We know that they're present at every stage of agri-food systems. They grow, they process, they harvest, they distribute, and they trade food and other agricultural commodities such as cotton. And we know that they also make great contributions to household food security and nutrition, and that they perform the essential care work to sustain the entire rural communities, including the agricultural labor force. So simply put, we know that agri-food systems would not function without women. However, despite these very important contributions, we know that women lack secure right to land tenure, that they face lower access to the markets, the finance. They don't always get a seat at the table where the decisions that shape their lives and work are made. And we believe that this International Year of the Woman Farmer is really an important moment to take stock, to reflect, to learn, and to take action. The International Year of the Woman Farmer presents both an opportunity and an obligation. It's an opportunity not only to celebrate and elevate the contributions of women farmers in agri-food systems, but also to see what works, what the gaps are, what works, and how do we leverage the actions. So it's a year of celebration and elevation, but also a year of obligation. Obligations to really address the inequalities, dismantle the barriers, repeal the discriminatory laws, shift the power, and unlock the full potential of women farmers everywhere. And this is essential for the cotton sector as well, which really helps us illustrate both the essential contributions women make across value chains and supply chains, but also the structural inequalities that they continue to face. So in terms of objectives, we have 6 objectives. You would uncover them in the concept note for the International Year. And I think it's worth going through them quickly just to show you where the international community wants to direct its attention and its energy in 2026. First, we want to increase public awareness on the multiple and crucial roles that women play in farming, bringing greater visibility to the good policies, success stories, and the evidence that underpin this. But we also want to attain greater awareness of land tenure issues, how they affect women farmers, with a particular focus on eliminating the legal and customary barriers to women's land ownership, and also removing any barrier that deny women secure right to land. And third, we also want to really understand women's farmers' financial needs and constraints and strengthen their financial inclusion through access to savings, credits, insurance, and markets. Another important issue is to address the technical needs of women farmers in terms of not only improving their access to advisory services, but also the appropriate technologies and the education at every level, from global policy to the farm itself. So those are the 4 objectives around awareness raising. However, as I said, beyond raising the awareness, we really want change, lasting change, in terms of supporting the development of policies, investments that are really conducive to women's empowerment in agri-food systems, encouraging governments, but also parliamentarians, to legislate, budget, and engage women in participatory planning processes. And as we speak, we are also preparing the 3rd Global Parliamentary Summit Against Hunger and Malnutrition, which is an additional opportunity in 2026 to shed light on women's farmers' needs and priorities. We also want to create synergies across the international activities that affect women farmers in terms of making progress that not only remain during the year, remain episodic, but is also carried forward into the broader international agenda. So taken together, we believe that those objectives really constitute a very comprehensive framework to increase the visibility, the rights, the finance, the technical capacity, the policies, and the international coordination. And we know that each one of those has a direct relevance for a commodity like cotton, where we know that women's important presence and contributions in the sector does not always equate the benefits that they get from the sector.
Thanks, Tako. This is very interesting and very ambitious campaign. I'm glad to learn all the details about them. And indeed, cotton is a very relevant crop when it comes to all these objectives that you're naming. Could we ask you, for our listeners who are somewhat involved in the cotton value chain globally, whether they are consumers of final products or whether they are stakeholders in the industry, from spinners, growers, merchants, if you had one advice to give our listeners in how they can get involved in supporting this campaign, what would be your advice, please?
Well, first, it's important to note that the year really belongs to everyone. It's a year about collective action that involves governments, the producer organizations, the private sector, civil society, value chain actors, women growers of cotton. And for those in the cotton sector, you know, this could mean integrating gender-responsive approaches into the programs, the supply chains, supporting women's access to the resources and the services, investing in women-led initiatives in the sector, amplifying the voices and experiences of women farmers. And therefore, we really encourage everybody to use the year as a platform to build something concrete. Mm-hmm. And as FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, we really look forward to working with partners across the cotton sector and beyond to help translate this momentum into lasting change. And I would really like to thank the thing about cotton for helping us bring this important conversation to a wider audience. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tako, for your time today. And we are trying to achieve part of the first goals that are about awareness through this podcast. But we will be speaking to a farmer later in this conversation about more concrete actions taking on the ground when it comes to cotton. So thank you so much for your insights. And we will put in the notes of the show a link to the FAO information about the Year of the Women Farmer campaign.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back, everybody. It's been great to hear about the Food and Agriculture Organization's global campaign for the Year of the International Women Farmer with high-level overarching objectives. And now, connecting it to practice on the ground, we are delighted to hear firsthand experiences from an inspirational women BCI cotton farmer from Maharashtra in India. Miss Vijayanti Parag Gokhale grew up on a cotton farm and has been managing her own cotton farm for the last 6 years in Karpure, Maharashtra in India. She is a BCI farmer who has been pioneering regenerative cotton farming, and she has a diploma in textile manufacturing as well as having completed her BA and MA. So, Ms. Gokhale, what made you decide to move towards regenerative, and what does that actually mean on your farm?
During chemical farming, the per acre cost became very high. I felt that we needed to change the method. I could not convert the entire farm at once, so I started gradually. The challenge was how to prepare natural fertilizers and medicines. Under a government scheme, compost beds were prepared. Since I had enough cattle, I prepared beds using cow dung. But I needed earthworms, and I could not find them easily. At that time, Mr. Shantaram Jambulkar from Ambuja Foundation used to visit me and encourage me to gradually shift to natural farming. I agreed with him, but needed time, because adopting something new requires confidence. When he arranged earthworms for me, I felt supported. The other team members of Ambuja Foundation and the Better Cotton team visited and explained regenerative farming. that it improves soil fertility, soil health, and protects soil, air, and water. They explained that as we take crops from the soil, we must also return nutrients to it. I understood that chemical fertilizers may give yield, but they do not improve soil health. So I decided to shift my full focus to regenerative farming.
Thank you very much for that. We'd love to hear that before adopting regenerative farming practices, what were the biggest challenges that you faced as a cotton farmer?
When I started chemical farming, I required a lot of capital. The prices of fertilizers, sprays, pesticides, and labor cost had increased drastically. My per acre expenditure and per acre income had almost become equal. Along with that, climate change was a big issue. Rainfall became irregular, sometimes excessive, and sometimes very little. Because of this, water did not get absorbed properly into the soil and would flow away, reducing soil fertility. I was facing all these challenges, but I managed to sustain because I knew some technical details. But a normal farmer may not be able to sustain under such pressure. Climate change is a major issue troubling farmers today.
Well, thank you for reminding us of some of the real challenges that exist within the farming community. And if people within the cotton industry, or indeed outside of the cotton industry, were to be listening to you right now, what would you want them to understand most?
You know, earlier cotton was called white gold, while gold was known as yellow gold. Today, yellow gold has increased 10 to 15 times in price, but cotton remains at the same level. Because cotton does not get a fair price, farmers are moving away from it. My request is that cotton farmers should receive a fair price. If farmers get proper value for adopting new and sustainable practices, they will definitely move forward and stand with dignity and self-respect.
Thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Gokhale, and thank you for sharing your perspectives on regenerative cotton farming.
Thank you very much.
So we hear a regenerative call to action from both the policy and farm implementation level. It feels like the time is ripe to do something tangible this year of the Women Farmer to support regenerative agriculture by creating stronger connectivity of policy and practice.
I agree, because from the FAO, we heard about the scale of the challenge, right? The need to recognize, support, and invest in women across ag systems. And then from the farm, we heard what that actually looks like in practice. So the decisions, the risks, and the realities behind adopting more sustainable methods. And in the end, both conversations point to the same thing, right? A transition to regen cotton, and more broadly speaking, to any sustainable form of cotton, can only happen if it actually works for the people at the heart of it.
Yes, indeed. And perhaps the most powerful reminder came from the field that the thing about cotton is it was once known as white gold. And a quick reminder to our listeners, after the success of last year's Cotlook special feature on women in the cotton industry, we have a follow-up this year, which is available to download.
That's right. Thanks for the reminder, Rebecca. It's been a year and we're back with a new edition, many articles for different women of the industry. We're going to communicate about it, but be on the lookout for it. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of The Thing About Cotton. If you want to learn more about today's episode or have any questions about the cotton value chain, feel free to email us at podcast@ica-ltd.org. Don't forget to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google, and follow the Women in Cotton group on LinkedIn and Facebook to stay up to date with our latest episodes, events, and ways to engage with others across the industry. A special thank you to the International Cotton Association for providing us with this platform.